Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers with Zach Cohen, right here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This is Zachary Cohen, VSiN.com, senior editor with the Friday episode of Hardwood Handicappers. Today is March 27th. It is 9:30 a.m. Eastern, and I am joined by Jonathan Von Tobel, co-host of Money Moves, co-host of Pods of the Futures. JVT, what's going on today?
Nothing much. Thanks for adjusting. Usually I join you on Thursdays, but I had some local radio things that I had to get done. We had a baseball show, a three-hour baseball show, and as much as I love baseball, that was not that thrilling. So I'm happy to be here and talk a little hoops for a while, because you can only do so much with the Oakland A's, you know?
Yeah, that's tough. 3 hours. I mean, I am dipping into baseball a little bit this year, but I could not do 3 hours. Couldn't even do one. So that's good on you. But there is some breaking news this morning that I did want to pick your thoughts on a little bit before we get into the picks for tonight. I guess it does kind of relate to tonight, because there's a huge card and a lot of the games feature tanking teams. But it does sound like they are moving towards their solution to tanking for next season, with Shams Charania of ESPN tweeting out three different ideas for next year that have been pitched to the NBA's Board of Governors, whatever that is. Three ideas that are, unique. And the first two that I think actually have a chance of going into action. So the first one is 18 teams in the draft lottery, with the top 10 teams or the worst 10 teams in the league having the exact same chance at the number one pick, an 8% chance. So I did, that is, probably the best one, as you noted to me off the show. Then number two, 22 teams in the lottery using 2-year records. It would be the worst teams in the league, the teams that make the play-in tournament, and then the teams that lose in the first round. And the 2-year record apparently is something that they use in the WNBA. And there would be a win floor. So if you were to lose less than a certain amount of games, you would be treated as if you won the win floor amount of games. So if that was 25 games, you'd be treated like a 25 win team, even if you won 8 games. So a little bit confusing. Yeah. But what are your thoughts when you saw this? Do you like any of them? Do you think any of them will work in terms of actually stopping this? Because Adam Silver said it's going to be a full stop on tanking. We're not going to see it anymore.
Yeah, I think that of all of them, the first one seems to be the one that makes the most sense to me. Like, if I was ranking them, it would be 1, 2, 3, the way that it's at least put in Shams' article. When you have an equal 8% chance of the bottom 10 teams, and then the remaining 20% of the odds split among the 8 play-in teams, that to me is enough of a deterrent that if I'm talking about being a, tanking team, if you will, I mean, bottom 10, that's, what am I trying to do here? So I think that is one that makes the most sense, especially when you talk about the, we'll call them minuscule. We saw the Mavericks win the first overall pick with 1% odds, but it's not really that big of an edge compared to nearly double at 14% what you're getting now if you're finishing in the bottom 3. So I like that one a lot. The other one, as you mentioned, is a little confusing, especially when you talk about the win floor, but the minimum floor, if you will, is as Shams put in the article, but I think that makes some sense when you're looking at it. And as you said, there's at least some history here, because that's the way the WNBA does it. But of all of them, I think these two make the most sense. The third one was the 5x5, which I didn't really like at all. The way that Shams broke it down was the same 18 teams from the first proposal, so bottom 10 that miss the play-in plus the 8 that make it, would be entered in the lottery. But the teams with the 5 worst records would then all have the same odds. That doesn't deter me, I think. You're still shooting for being one of those bottom 5 teams if you're tanking. So I think overall, you're talking about, dude, a spider just crawled over my camera. Did you see that?
I didn't see it. Was it a Snapchat filter? I did not see it.
No, like I noticed a little, like, it's a tiny spider, but yeah, like a little red thing just floated over. Anyway, so I apologize. I just killed it, and so a life was just lost. I didn't like the third one. So of the three, I think I would go 1 and 2, and then we'll see what the third one is. But I would assume reading this that those are not going to be something that I think the people that are trying to deter tanking would enjoy.
Yeah, the third one, it's just, there's going to be a race to the bottom 5 still. So yeah. I think that Adam Silver is going to say absolutely no to that one. I guess it's not just his decision alone, but I do think that the first two definitely go a little bit further towards fixing the problem. Number one, I do think that just flatten them all, make it 1 through 18, make everybody feel like they should try to make the play-in tournament, and that there's no, kind of harm in doing so. I mean, that's, the next step that they might want to take there, but it's at least a start. And I do think they're going to get it right in some way, shape, or form. I think that, you know, we saw kind of the writing on the wall in a way when we saw teams like the Wizards and Jazz, who are perennial tankers, making kind of win, not now, but win next year trades at the trade deadline. I feel like that was kind of like, all right, like, we're not going to be able to do this again. Let's just try to make a, you know, make a play for a better team.
I've said this a bunch of times. I think I've said it on here. I think this year Silver kind of put the nail in his own coffin when he's been so like vocally anti-tanking, because I don't know where it's from, but it's just like, okay, fine. We're just going to do it harder this year, right? Yeah. Like this class is really good. This might be the last year we can ever really do this. So all of these teams are just like, screw it, dude. And we're just going to see if we could get really, we're going to get really tanky for the last season and see if we can get down there. And they really are doing it. I mean, we'll talk about the point spreads that you talk about it every day. I listen to you. You see it every day. There is a smattering of what, 14 to 16 point underdogs almost every single day in the association. So I can understand wanting to maybe get rid of this. But like you said, too, as we move forward, it's going to be interesting. And I'll throw something in that our betting audience doesn't really care about, but I find very interesting. This now comes on the heels, Zach, of their announcement that they have voted to explore expansion in both Las Vegas and Seattle. And we don't know what the expansion draft rules are going to be. And usually in these situations, those expansion teams have better odds to get a first overall pick. So I'm going to be curious to see how they balance the anti-tanking stuff with the odds they'll give the Seattle and Vegas when and if they are announced, which is expected to be a formality at this point. But that's like a thing that's down the road. So I'm very interested to see what that's going to look like, too.
Yeah, which, by the way, once there are expansion rules, I kind of want to have you and Kelly on to do like a mock expansion draft, because I just think I'm so fascinated with it.
I'm so excited, dude.
Yeah, I'm really excited too. And I like, Seattle deserves their team back. And I think that it's going to be really cool to kind of see teams like the Thunder that are super deep every single year. Who are they going to protect? If it's eight players the way that we kind of think it's going to be, you're talking about losing someone that's really good or on a really good contract. So it's going to be really interesting.
One of the fake expansion drafts, because they use the old rules, but either way, Ja Morant is on his way to being a Vegas Viper, apparently. Oh, which God. Is, I don't know if I would enjoy that. I don't know if I would feel, I don't need him, as a member of local media, I don't need him to tweet at me, you need to feel what Hollows feel like, or whatever the hell he tweeted that one time.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, hopefully that does not happen. I can't think of a worse spot for him. I know a lot of people were saying Miami, but that sounds way worse. So yeah, maybe Seattle, not Vegas.
Hey, we're more than the strip, buddy. Okay. All right. He'd be fine out here. He'd be fine.
That's true. That's true. All right. Well, let's move on and start talking about some of these games. Like I said before, there's a lot when you're looking at the tanking stuff tonight. I have what, how many on this list? Seven games out of tonight's slate that like, just there's a team playing for nothing. At least one of them, in all of them. So let's just kind of list those out. It's Clippers, Pacers, Rockets, Grizzlies, Bulls, Thunder, Jazz, Nuggets, Wizards, Warriors, Mavericks, Trailblazers, Nets, Lakers. And I usually just skip these games completely and say, you know, if you want to parlay these teams, go for it. I wasn't able to find a parlay with them. I actually have some picks for these games tonight. So I guess we're going to have to get into them. But what do you have? Anything in that group? I know that there was one you were kind of eyeing.
Okay, yes. Chicago and OKC, I think, is very interesting. Only because this is, and I like that Stormy's out in Japan or the Philippines or whatever, so I can't make fun of her now, today, to her face at the very least, but I will continue to do so. Stormy Bonatoni uttered the famous words about like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that she's just going to fade the Chicago Bulls. And like since then, they've been like the best ATS team in the NBA. They've been absolutely incredible. And part of it is, I don't want to say they've stumbled into some of these covers. Like they beat the Rockets outright the other day. But the numbers are getting so big for Chicago that they are kind of like almost covering by default to an extent. And now you get this against OKC, who is the complete opposite side of the spectrum. The Thunder can't cover a number consistently to save their lives. And yet the market continues to throw out some of these big numbers. I think you were there with me, and I think Kelly, falling for, I used this term correctly, and I've seen the movie, even though it came out before 1990, Beverly Hills Cop, the banana in the tailpipe, right? Mm-hmm. Only 2 points against Boston on the road. Of course they can do that. And they end up losing 119 to 109. This team hasn't covered consecutive games for exactly a month now. On February 25th was the last time they covered a consecutive game, was part of four straight or something like that. I just find this very interesting that you have one team that can't cover a number, has been very overvalued, is up to 20.5, I'm seeing on my screen over at BetMGM. And then you have Chicago, who is deemed to be the worst team, awful, tanking, that just consistently has covered numbers and has been an absolute bet-on team for the last 2-3 weeks. And I wonder if we're just at that point again where it's just worth looking at Chicago because of how inflated these point spreads have been for OKC.
Yeah, and they've been the ones that have consistently kind of ruined the parlays for all of us every night. Billy Donovan is just a really good coach. Like, if there are any doubts about what he's going to be able to do potentially if you were to go back to UNC, I would not be concerned about that whatsoever. I think the guy has proven that no matter who he has at his disposal, he can win games. So I do think this is a game where maybe I'll be looking at Chicago. I think that OKC, well, I was listening to the Zach Lowe show. He had Brian Scalabrine on there talking about that Thunder game the other night. Against the Celtics, and there's just like that rotation, it's just way too like kindergarten where like everyone gets equal playing time, and like they're just not taking, you know, winning as seriously as they should. Maybe they don't need to. They have a lot of guys they want to keep healthy for the postseason, but as long as like J-Dub and Chet and everybody besides SGA is playing like under 30 minutes, there's going to be chances for other teams to cover numbers.
Yeah, I think I would agree with like all those points. Like, and they have bigger fish to fry, so there's not really any like a motivation to go out there and beat these guys every single night. So I don't know if I want to do it. I always give my buddy Doug Kazarian credit for this one, in that it might be the right side, but do you really want to go through it? Like, do you really want to take 19.5 and then watch Chicago match up with Oklahoma City and have like their brains getting beaten in for stretches? And you're like, oh man, like, why am I doing this to myself? Yeah. But I am somewhat tempted to look at this and like the non-data, whatever, you know, point you want to make in terms of just like the pure handicap, is, does OKC come out with their hair on fire after losing a game like that to the Boston Celtics, where they were up at half and they kind of let go of the rope a little bit there in the fourth quarter and didn't really get the result, obviously, that they wanted against a team that they might see down the road? And you do wonder if maybe there's a solid bounce back there coming for OKC. And they're just also just working through stuff. Like you mentioned, like the way that they're giving everybody time, but they're finally healthy for the first time in a long time. And I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing them not cover some of these numbers. The market sees the full OKC team, and rightfully so, but on the court, these guys haven't really been playing consistently together all year long.
Yep. Yeah, and you do have to decide whether or not you want to do it. And I did decide that I was going to do it with the Grizzlies tonight at plus 12 and a half. Put that in last night, ended up waking up, seeing that it was 13 some places. So it's a great start already. But I do think that this Rockets team has just kind of lost me completely. Like, I know, like, it's a bunch of garbage and like hot takey stuff, but like no one went over to Alperen Şengün after he had like the coolest block of all time the other night. But like, there is something off with this team. And I do think that Memphis, even though they have a weird rotation right now as well, no Ty Jerome tonight, who has been like the best guard in basketball this season, but they just have so many players that are competing for like roster spots and stuff like that. And Isolo is a player, is a coach that needs to kind of prove himself over these next few years. So I do just kind of think you're going to get a strong effort out of Memphis. I don't know that that's going to be enough because talent wise, that's going to be terrible. But the Rockets are 1-7 against the spread over the last 8 games, 3-11 against the spread in the last 14. Memphis got blown out by San Antonio last game when they played at home, but they did cover in back-to-back home games against Denver and Boston. So this has been a more competitive team than you might think. And I do just kind of want to fade the Rockets tonight. I'm mad at the Rockets.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think it makes a ton of sense. And to the point of like Şengün not really getting any support, I'm sorry, but like, I don't know if I would high five him either. I would like go back to anybody, go back and watch that 15-0 run that Minnesota went on in overtime. You know who was getting blown by a ton on just simple drives to the basket? It was Alperen Şengün, and he was just kind of flailing at stuff and not really doing anything. And look, you need better perimeter defense, and the Timberwolves were awesome down that stretch in terms of just picking at the same thing over and over again and going after them. But for whatever reason, in a game which neither team was really efficient, during that run in overtime, that Rockets defense fell apart, and they were awful. And I would say, I made this comment the other day on the air, you know, at some point, Zach, Ime Udoka's bit of just calling a timeout and then calling his team a-holes and then like walking away is just, it's not going to work, right? At some point, you actually have to do some real coaching. Every once in a while, you get the cool stories, like when they were on the run with the Celtics to the NBA Finals and he called the timeout and he told them to stop playing like bleep holes and then walked off and then they went on like a 12-0 run. Those are all fun. But at some point, you've actually got to connect with these guys, and that's not happening. And very clearly, it's not happening. So I'm with you. Like, I would want no part of Houston. You've seen nothing from them that would make you think that you would be comfortable coming in here and saying, oh, yeah, like they can win by like 13, 14 points for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I do think Ime's a good coach. It's just like so much has fallen apart this season that everyone's kind of ripping him the last couple of days. So hopefully, I mean, I don't think he should lose his job. Like, it just would be a little unfair with FVV and Adams out. But it has been an ugly product this year, and especially for the last couple of months.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'll just quickly run through the other picks that I have. They're both player props for these other games. I don't want to spend too much time on the tanking games. Took Isaiah Jackson, your Isaiah Jackson, over 7.5 points at plus 100 in the Clippers-Pacers game. 10 plus points in 5 of the last 6. He had 10 points the last time he faced Indiana on March 4th. The Pacers are, you know, a terrible team guarding inside 10 feet, where Jackson scores like literally all of his points, and one of the worst defensive teams in the league against pick and roll rollers and like putbacks. I just think that Jackson's activity around the rim will be big for the Clippers tonight. I think that Jackson's a good player. I think also there's a little bit of motivation there with the Pacers having traded him. And then PJ
Washington is still in a Pacers uniform. Yeah.
Oh no, that's brutal. And then PJ Washington over 13.5 points minus 115 in the Mavericks Blazers game at 10 p.m. Eastern. That's 18 plus points in the last 3 games for Washington without Daniel Gafford. I think there's going to be a lot of small ball 5 minutes for him in this game, because I do think that whether he's making shots or not, you pull Donovan Klingon away from the basket or you play him off the floor by having a 3-point shooter at the 5. And he's had one game already this year against Portland where he scored 21 points. So thought that was a pretty low number. Mavericks, kind of one of the weirder tanking teams where they're still trying because of Cooper Flagg and the rookie of the year pursuit. So I do think that that's going to be one where you could expect Washington to play good minutes and produce. By the way, rookie of the year pursuit, just want to quickly say, well, actually, we'll talk about the Hornets right after this.
Yeah.
Like if you're looking to sharpen your edge the remainder of the NBA season, VSiN Pro is where to start. Get advanced analytics, player prop projections, and expert insights used by serious bettors every day. Try it out for only $9.99 for your first month and see what smart bettors are using to beat the books. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe and check out all of the subscription options. All right, I just mentioned we'll talk a little bit about the Charlotte Hornets because Con Knipple reminded me of why we need to do that. I did just want to quickly shout out that last night, Knipple had a really big game, 26 points, 11 rebounds, 8 assists in a 114-103 win over the Knicks. I think it was really big with the timing because Flagg has been making kind of a late push for Dallas. They've been just rolling the ball out to him saying, all right, go win it, man. And I do think that he's been doing a good job of kind of making up the ground between him and Knipple. So Con, you know, kind of lighting it up was huge, but I know you wanted to talk a little bit about Charlotte. I think I know why. I did mention it in the newsletter this morning. I'm not sure if it actually made it or not. I haven't seen it, but yeah, go for it. Give them their love.
Well, wait, no, whoa, I want to know what you said. What'd you say in the newsletter that allegedly didn't make it?
I got to go make sure that it was posted, but I did just kind of shout out that, like, if you've been questioning whether or not this team and what they've been doing over the last couple of months is real, there was like a wire-to-wire win over the Knicks. It was in there a little bit. You know, it maybe cut down a little bit. It's in the newsletter. But yeah, you go for it. I want to let you, let you spit.
I mean, you said it. If you, and I mentioned this yesterday going into it, and first off, I think they were only 1.5-point favorites. And I mentioned this to Ben Stevens, who was co-hosting with me yesterday. You know, at some point, we have to just start power rating them as a team that is on par with some of these other teams. I mean, 1.5 would tell you that the Knicks are better on a neutral court. I don't buy it. As I mentioned to Stevens yesterday, the Charlotte Hornets, since the turn of the calendar, are 28-12 straight up. They lead the league in non-garbage time net rating. They've outscored opponents by 12 points. Lead the league. The second place team is the San Antonio Spurs in that category. Statistically, they have been better than San Antonio since January 1st. They have been absolutely incredible. They're doing it on both ends. They're first in offensive efficiency over this span. They're fifth in defensive efficiency. You said it. It was a wire-to-wire win and a comfortable win for the most part at that against a Knicks team that I think if you were to just man on the street and say, who do you think's better, Charlotte or New York? A lot of people would say New York. And I just think when you look at it, and I know we've said this before, but I feel stronger about it, I think, more than ever after I've been watching this team deliver. I think we're at a point right now where, I mean, they can win multiple playoff series, and I think they should be power rated or maybe even considered the, what, second or third best team in the Eastern Conference. The only teams that I think you would say strongly, and I wouldn't even say without a doubt, but just strongly, hey, I think that they are better. Boston, just because they've done it before, and Tatum is back, Mazzulla's awesome. And Cleveland, just because of the high-end talent of James Harden and Donovan Mitchell. But I don't, like, as much as I like Cleveland, Zach, if they were to run into Charlotte, would I be surprised if Charlotte beat them at a best of seven, given how bad that defensive backcourt can be at times? No, I don't. I don't think so at all. And so I think that if we're talking about a true pecking order in the Eastern Conference, 1 and 2 can be any mix you want of Boston and Cleveland. I think Charlotte has to be third. I think that is like the floor for what this team has been. And statistically, there is no question that's what they've been since the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I still kind of have a top four in the East, and I don't have a strong order. I think that those teams are all very similar to me. I think that Boston is being a little bit overrated right now. I think that New York has, I think Kelly said it well, has the highest floor. Cleveland has the highest upside, but I'm with you in that if you were ignoring the first portion of the season, the Hornets are in that four. It becomes a five-team Eastern Conference top tier, and I will have the Hornets to win the Eastern Conference. It's just a matter of what number. Like, do I want to take it now at 40-1, or do I want to wait until I know they're in the field, which I'd feel a little bit better about, even if it's down to like 18-1 at that point. So I will have Charlotte to win the East. I just think you said it really well. Like, this is one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. An argument can be made that they're the best team in the Eastern Conference because you just said since the calendar turned, and I've been hesitant to use like that sample size because there was like the 55-point win over Utah at some point in there. But now if you even look at post All-Star, they're 12-5 with a plus 13.7. That's the highest net ratings, post All-Star break. Yep. So that means that they have the best net rating in the league, not including that Jazz game that I don't like to include. And now it's just overwhelming evidence this is one of the best teams in the NBA. It's just the start to the season has skewed everything and made everyone not believe that they are a contender.
Like, well, I'll even if and again, it's a small sample size, but to your point, if you want to, nitpick or take things out. Okay. Since the start of the calendar year, guess who leads the league in net rating against teams with a top 10 net rating? It's the Charlotte Hornets. What I mean? Like, so even then they it's a small sample size. It's only 11 games, but that shows you. And by the way, so they've outscored those opponents by 5.6 points every 100 possessions in non-garbage time. They have the second best offensive rating against teams with a top 10 net rating since the start of January. They lead the league in defensive rating against top 10 opponents. Like, there's so like any way you cut it. And to your point about the beginning of the year, it's a lot of people, when you talk about sample size and what you're measuring and why you're doing it, some would say that's arbitrary. Remember, they were injured at the beginning of the year. They got off to a poor start because Brandon Miller immediately got hurt at the beginning of the season. The starting five didn't really start games consistently until, what do we talk about, like beginning of December or so, or maybe even like mid-December. This team, I think that there is a legitimacy to it, and the sample size is growing day by day. It is growing how good this team is. And I'm amazed to watch it. And yesterday I thought was somewhat eye-opening. The fact that the market was somewhat hesitant to buy in, and they went out there and just said like, no, like we're better than the Knicks and we're just going to beat them and we're going to lead wire to wire and really have no issues in this game whatsoever. I thought that was a really, for a Thursday night in March, that was a pretty like impactful victory for Charlotte, I thought.
Yeah, and that's almost exactly what I said in the newsletter, because like the other night I wrote up something for Bill AD, my boss, about the Thunder losing to the Celtics. Like, that was a massive game. And I'm like, this isn't quite that, but this is a statement win. Yeah. Like the only time the Knicks led, I think, was 2-0. And then, it ended up being 4-2. Charlotte, that was the end. Like, the Knicks never led again. So this was a really impressive performance from them. I'm like, people ask me if I think that the youth is going to get to the Spurs in the postseason. I keep saying no. I think that if anything's going to get to San Antonio, it's going to be the role players around the youth. I think might be a little bit too weak. Which Charlotte, I'm a little bit nervous about that youth kind of getting to them, because I think that Brandon Miller is a player that is great, but maybe kind of struggles with like high pressure situations and like being doubled and blitzed and all that. So I just kind of wonder what he's going to look like against playoff coverages. But I do think that there's just nothing would be surprising about them being deep in the playoffs or in the NBA finals. Honestly, it's like that might be crazy to say, but the numbers show you that this is an elite team.
Well, dude, Thunder Hornets NBA finals would be insane.
Yeah, it would be. That would be
Clippers
awesome.
Clippers Hornets would be better.
And Charlotte's going to get better next year too. And they're going to win like 50 games, 55 games, like something crazy.
Oh, like next year. I don't think it would be crazy if next year we were talking about Hornets. Can you imagine Hornets Jazz in the NBA finals? That would be sexy.
can't wait for Utah next year, because I think that the Ace Bailey stuff is really starting to happen. And like Cody Williams even looks like a rotation player at times. Like, this is just everything that they kind of could have hoped for with all the guys injured. It's kind of happening. So they're going to be pretty deep next year too.
So, and I'll just, they, again, a non-betting point, because I keep hearing a lot about this, especially being out here in Vegas, because, you know, the expansion team and when working in local media. If you tell me that the league is watered down, you're an idiot who's just repeating talking points. You have no idea what you're talking about. Next year is going to be insane. There's going to be a ton of competitive teams. And listen to what we just said. It is not out of the realm of possibility at all that the Jazz and the Hornets are in the Final Four competing to get into the NBA Finals next year. Not at all.
Yep.
That's where this league is at right now. So miss me with the league is watered down nonsense. You have no clue what you're talking about. And adding two teams isn't going to be a problem. But this Hornets team, as you could tell, has me very excited. Stormy's husband is from Charlotte, Chris. And they're in the Philippines, as I mentioned. He texted me yesterday after the game. It was just like Hornets in all capital letters.
I was watching in the Philippines.
I made a terrible joke. I was like, they have internet out there? Like, what the hell's going on? But dude, this team's incredible, man. And like, they're going to be a pain in the ass for every team in the Eastern Conference, whoever they face. I am going to be selfish though and say, I hope they go play into playoffs, because I have them at 12-1 to make the playoffs, but I have them at 4-1 to participate in the play-in. So I would love to double dip, but I guess I'd rather have the 12-1 to make the playoffs.
By the way, when you talk about the talent pool, I just decided that Isaiah Collier is going to be the Vegas starting point guard, averaging 12 points, like 18 assists per game is for his first season as the face of that franchise.
Whatever it is called. My vote is the Scorpions. I think that's what they're going to call it. But
I can see that. I think
they're not going to go gambling.
They're going to go gambling. The Aces is such a good name.
It is, but I think with the Terry Rozier stuff, they want to stay away from Vegas and gambling being like synonymous in terms of the mascot. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be something generic. Like people keep throwing out the Vipers, the Scorpions, I think is going to be my vote. We'll see what it is, but I think it's going to be a generic animal type.
It sucks because it should be like Outlaws or something cool.
Outlaws isn't bad. You could convince, I think, maybe somebody to do that. Or the one... what was the one that I heard that was actually, I do like the, what is the term for what the Thunder are? You know what I mean? Like that there's amorphous plural name, like, you know, the Thunder or the Heat. But I thought the Mob would be pretty good, but obviously that's never going to happen.
That's not allowed. That might be too far.
The Vegas Mob would be dope, dude. Take you out back, brother.
I don't know why I'm terrified that like the new Seattle ownership's going to be like, we want to put our own stamp on this and not be the Sonics.
Oh,
like,
there'd be mutiny. There's no way you could do that.
It has to be the Sonics.
They have to be.
But I am scared. All right. We have some games that actually matter tonight. And I know that you do have not a time limit, but you want to get out of here. So we're going to move on to the Hawks at the Celtics, 7:30 p.m. Eastern tip. This, like I said, it's one of the games that actually matters. Two playoff teams. The Celtics are 5.5-point favorites. Total's 226.5. And while this is a game that I do look forward to watching, I found it very hard to handicap because there are nobody. It's an ugly injury report for Boston right now. Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Nemias Keita, all questionable, and Brown with that scary calf in there. So would doubt that he's going to be playing tonight. So I kind of think that the reason we're seeing the Hawks as such short underdogs is because we're going to see some absences for Boston. So it would be Atlanta or pass for me, but don't really trust the Hawks in this spot. What do you think?
I would agree with everything that you just said. Atlanta put a little bit of a scare in you the other day if you were watching them and handicapping them and betting on them. They come out in the first half, gangbusters. They hit, I think, almost every single shot in the first half. They build up, I think it was an 18-point lead, and then you blink in the third quarter and Detroit's up two. So, you know, I don't think this team is entirely trustworthy, especially against a team like Boston, who, regardless of the presence of Jaylen Brown and Derek White, you know how they're going to play. They're going to take those high variant shots. They're going to shoot from beyond the arc. There's going to be some volatility in a game like this. And Mazzulla's just fantastic. I'm with you. Given the absences, you'd lean toward Atlanta, just the fact that we might have a game where Jaylen Brown and Derek White might not play. But I don't know if Atlanta is trustworthy enough at this point. Yeah, I felt like I got away with one the other day. Against the Pistons. And in fact, I had three bets that day. It was Atlanta against the Pistons. It was the other cover was what? Oh, it was the Pacers against the Lakers. How about that cover?
Oh, my God.
Staying inside of 9.5. There's, and then I think
like
I got smoked.
30-point game at one point, right?
And then I got smoked by the Celtics with the Thunder. So it was a very lucky day. I guess that's how it breaks sometimes. But I don't trust Atlanta enough here.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's really all I have for that game. I mean, look, the Hawks Pistons game the other night, I've just been weirded out by what we've seen with Detroit. Like last night against New Orleans was another game that I thought the Pelicans would have a shot to win outright. Yep. This Pistons team has a weird amount of like Warriors like firepower where they just go on these flurries and score for a team that's missing Cade Cunningham. Dennis Jenkins is just awesome.
Yes. I mean, yeah. Why do these guys come from all of a sudden? Future Vegas Viper, I suppose, that's going to lead the team here in 2 years. But okay, I'm happy that I haven't been taking too many shots against Detroit, but like they are very impressive at this point right now. And I think what is the so they are they 3-1 straight up and against the spread since I lost Cade Cunningham? I think I've got that right. So they have at least exceeded my expectations at this point, because I did not think they were going to be able to get these things done. And yesterday to cover by 15.5 points, depending on what your closing number was, that was insane.
Yeah, yeah. And the Pelicans, there were like multiple trips that I saw where they missed both free throws and stuff. Just a bad, yep. bad performance. But let's move on to the Heat Cavaliers now. Another game where, like, if you're asking me the side, I don't really know what it is. Slight lean for Cleveland for me, but I know you have something here, and I do have a player prop, so hit the people with your pick.
I'm going to go basic here and lay it with Cleveland. I lay 4.5. I think that this is one of those simple baseball series type bets. The last one, these two teams met a couple of days ago. Miami caught Cleveland in a pretty good spot. They had just played a relative clutch game against Orlando, second leg of a back-to-back and a tight one against the Magic. And now after a day off with a little bit more rest, the injury report is a little bit more favorable. Jared Allen's questionable. I would expect that he gets upgraded and is going to play tonight too. So that's going to be a pretty good thing for the Cleveland Cavaliers, but situationally much better spot. And I continue to believe that there is some fraudulence here for Miami. Jaime Jaquez is questionable, so we'll see if he ends up playing and where the number ends up shaking out. But I've not really bought into Miami. And in fact, going into that game against Cleveland, I believe it was a 5-game losing streak for Miami, and they ended up snapping that against Cleveland with that win. I think they're going to get back to those ways here. I know they've been a good cover team, but you know me, I buy into this Cleveland squad a ton. And now with a day off in between, I think they're going to have a little bit more revenge in this little baseball set in Cleveland. So we'll go with the Cavaliers -4.5.
Yeah, the baseball set and losing the first end of it is why I would think that the Cavaliers get back in the win column. I do think Jared Allen's going to play, so I'm with you there. I'm also with you with Cleveland love long term. I think the Cleveland yep. is the highest upside team in the Eastern Conference. They just need a couple of weeks being healthy to just kind of figure this all out and build some chemistry heading into the postseason. I played Sam Merrill again, over 12.5 points at -120. He's had 12-plus points in 6 straight games, 15-plus in 3 straight, and 4 of the last 5. And you know, the other night had 18 points against this Heat team, and I did mention that I like the matchup for him against Miami because they do play at such a fast pace. They struggle to defend non-corner threes, and overall they're below average when defending spot-up shooters. So I don't really see any reason to go away from Merrill here. You can get -105 to go over 12.5. I took it at -20, so you'll do better than I did.
Okay, I like it. I'm gonna tell you on that, I haven't played enough player props for the last couple of days.
And I'm sure Mitch is on it. Mitch Moss from Follow the Money. I think he's on Merrill like every single night.
He loves him.
He loves him. He loves AJ Green too.
Yes.
All right. Final game of the night that I wanted to talk about and kind of separate. Do not have anything here either, but it's the Pelicans, who we were just talking about, going up against the Raptors. The Raptors are 8.5-point favorites. This is the second leg of a back-to-back and third game in 4 nights for New Orleans. Not sure what to do here. Raptors -8.5, but I think you have something.
We're diving in, buddy. Screw the scheduling spot. All right. I don't care that they got to go through customs. I don't care that they have to deal with this. I don't care that they've had to, you know, fail to cover 2 out of their last 3. We're rolling in. We're rolling in hard here on the New Orleans Pelicans taking some points. Look, Toronto's been in okay form. They've lost 3 out of the last 4, but from a covering standpoint, they've covered 5 out of the last 7, coming off of that loss on the road to the Los Angeles Clippers. Some would call this is that old school, back from a long road trip spot for Toronto. You know, the old candy cappers would tell you, like, right? Yeah, you got to come home and take care of your broads and pay the bills and whatnot. It's a distraction coming back home after being off for so long. So maybe there's something to that. But I do think that New Orleans, the larger sample size would tell us that Borrego has gotten them to be a pretty competent team. And catching 8.5 against a Toronto team that I have had some issues with, especially with some of the numbers they've been catching. I mean, you look at where they're at in terms of the numbers and the numbers that they have covered for the most part. The role of favorite is not one that I really trust Toronto a ton in. I like when they're going out there and catching some points in certain situations, but I think New Orleans is competent enough and young enough to deal with the situation, go in there, take on Toronto back at home and get a win today in terms of the cover.
Yeah, it's a really big number. I mean, I wouldn't mind Raptors money line in like a parlay somewhere, sure. But I do think if I had to take a side, it probably would be the Pelicans, even with last night's game just being disgusting. So it's not the greatest slate of NBA games, but at least unlike the other, you know, 3 days to start the week, there are some good college basketball games to, you know, watch if you can't stomach these. But we'll get into that quickly right after this. Attention any listeners who are new to VSiN. Signing up for our free daily newsletter is a great way to catch up. Delivered straight to your inbox every morning, VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, and strategies for the day's betting menu. Sign up for free now at vsin.com/newsletter and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That's vsin.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. All right, well, I just teased it a little bit, but before we kind of recap our best bets for the NBA, do you have anything for college basketball tonight? Because I have been doing some of this, you know, the last couple of days. Do like giving out some of these picks for March Madness. So if you have anything, you know, feel free to let us know or just tell us, you know, when you're going to be talking about it today on Money Moves.
Yeah, we'll be talking about it all day. Ben Stevens is in, but I do have a good number on the total for St. John's and Duke. I got under 142.5. We're at 140.5 right now. So we have this Circa College Hoops Challenge, and I am in the running to potentially get this. I'm 1.5 out of the lead. So I did a little gamesmanship in the contest. I knew that a lot of people were going to be on Duke, and I was right, or excuse me, on St. John's. So I have Duke -7 in the contest. I also really lean in that direction, too. I don't know why anybody has watched St. John's half-court offense and thought, yeah, they got this. Their half-court offense has been abysmal. So I think Duke's going to be able to play them pretty well here. And I think I'm going to regret this, but I got the best of the number. I took 10 with Alabama against Michigan. It's like 9. There's a smattering of 9.5s. DraftKings, I'm looking at, is 8.5. I don't know if my screen's accurate right here. But one of the things that I think is really going to help Alabama here, I don't care about the shooting against Texas Tech the other day. It's more about Michigan, who has a penchant for turning the ball over at a very high rate, giving a quick transition team who likes to get out and run opportunities to do just that, hit some shots. My final score that I keep throwing out is like 100-91. I just think it's going to be a really fun, high-flying, high-scoring affair. Wouldn't say no if you wanted to bet this thing over as well, and that's where the market's heading. But those are the two for sure. Under in the St. John's Duke game, I think under 141 is still playable, and there's still a couple of those out there. And then Alabama, Michigan took Alabama. I still think 9.5 is playable if you want to grab that.
I like all of it. I mean, I think the Duke is the right side against St. John's. I'm completely with you. I think the Red Storm offense is just disgusting, and I think the Duke is really good. I think that the Caleb Foster injury hurts, but I do think that they have good enough guard play, and really it's all about Boozer playing well. So I kind of just think that that's going to be a game where it's going to be ugly, but I do think they're going to find a way to cover. The one play that I have is UConn money line against Michigan State. I'm a little nervous about Luke Murray just taking a job with Boston College. I don't know what that meant for, you know, the preparation there, but I do think that UConn's offense is just going to be a little too good in the half court for Michigan State. I think both teams are good defensively, but I just trust the Huskies to execute at a much higher level just because we've seen it whenever Dan Hurley has a talented team at this time of year, they just kind of look like a machine on that end of the floor. So I would expect them to win, and I think they have a really good chance of beating Duke once they do.
Yeah, I don't like UConn at all, so I guess we'll be at odds there a little bit. Only like they're, dude, they were the worst, one of the worst cover teams in the country. They've been awful. They've been overvalued all year long. And Michigan State was one of my final four teams, but I didn't feel strongly enough to play it. So I will root for you either way, even though I don't like them.
Yeah, and then for Survivor, I still have two different Survivor pools, big money ones that are not the $1,000 entry that we have with VSiN and Splash Sports, but I have a 150 entry. I need something tonight, and I need Iowa State is where I'm going with it. I'm really nervous about it. I feel like the Joshua Jefferson injury could end up being, you know, what ends up dooming me, but I need to hold on to some of these other teams, and I just feel like Iowa State's the only one I can play tonight.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. And we'll see. Jefferson's going to be a game time decision, right? So I think they're going to be in a good spot. I think you talk about, I keep calling Tennessee hockey on wood because they're just dumping Chase. It's just like throw up bad shots, get offensive rebounds and putbacks. And I don't think you're going to be able to do that against Iowa State.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did see Jefferson like shooting around yesterday, like with nothing major on his ankle. He said it hurts a lot, but he said that if he could play through pain, he will. And it just sounded like a guy that's going to try to play. Just hopefully it's not like 4 minutes and then he has to come out and can't play. But yeah, those are the picks for me. But yeah, let's recap the best bets for tonight and get everyone out of here. I have Isaiah Jackson over 7.5 points at plus 100. Grizzlies plus 12.5 minus 105 versus the Rockets. PJ Washington over 13.5 points at minus 115 versus the Blazers. Sam Merrill over 12.5 points at minus 120 versus the Heat. And UConn moneyline minus 105 versus Michigan State. What do you have?
Cavaliers -4.5 against the Miami Heat, and New Orleans Pelicans +8 against the Toronto Raptors. And if we're including our college basketball plays here today, under in St. John's and Duke today, as well as Alabama +10.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me today. Everybody that listened, if you enjoyed it, please like, rate, comment, subscribe, whatever you can do. We appreciate all positive feedback, and best of luck if you're tailing tonight. No show tomorrow or Sunday, but we'll be back with a Monday episode of Hardwood Handicappers, and I will have NBA picks over on the website, vsin.com, Saturday and Sunday. So if you're looking for them, I will have you covered.